Good morning, everybody. I always feel very nervous talking to clinicians and people that work within the health service. First of all, because I've been robbed of the ability to speak without notes, I hope you all understand that I have to read. And also, I would like to do my thank yous first. So I want to thank all of you for being here and collaborating on behalf of people like me that have dementia. To the Alzheimer's Society, Alzheimer's Europe, the Irish Dementia Working Group, and the European Working Group of People with Dementia, who supported me, to GINEO, the National Dementia Office, our local community health organisation, and most important, to Geraldine McCarthy and her team for keeping me healthy, and to Magella O'Donnell, my dementia advisor, who's moved on to greater things, who's supported me so much over the last number of years. So it's great to have the opportunity to speak to you about my experience of living with dementia from a human rights perspective. First of all, I would like to remember the 2,000 people who will be diagnosed across Europe today and many others who will not. I stand here today as one of the lucky ones. A strange thing, you might think. What is lucky about having a condition that robs you of the future you had planned together with your family and ultimately robs you of the ability to recognise them? Yet getting a diagnosis is so important to me, and I know to many others. In 2012, it was confirmed that I had early onset Alzheimer's, or younger onset as is known today, and which I now understand also is very difficult to diagnose. The diagnosis came after a long period of 5 years of wondering what was the matter with me. My first diagnosis came in 2007, and this is the doctor's quote. "I wonder, has a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease been entertained by a treating neurologist?" I was attending one. A few months later, in 2008, another doctor said, "Maybe an underlying cerebral illness, which has a gradual deterioration. It may well be the underlying parallel cerebral disease." So what would have happened if I had not been given a diagnosis? If my GP has decided to disclose my illness only to my family, but not to me, what would have happened if I had been kept in the dark by my family about the next steps of my future? We are talking about human rights here today. People with dementia are not even given the very fundamental right from the onset of to be told of their diagnosis. I would like to put this question to you all today. What other illness is out there where a person's diagnosis is not disclosed to them? There's no way that I can disclose the shock to you or describe it to you of receiving the diagnosis and the long, lonely road home from Galway to Tubbercurry and how I was going to tell my husband and my son. But there was, however, a degree of relief in knowing that I was and having got a diagnosis, as I really thought I was losing my mind. If you are faced with this, my situation, would you not want to be told what is happening to you? Before I talk to you about the need for changes in our approach to dementia care with human rights approach, I will give you a glimpse of my life with Alzheimer's and my self-determination. I'm sure that will come as a shock to some of you that know me. This has been one of denial and sadness to acceptance and living as good as I can, to the more recent phase of advocating for rights. When I was diagnosed, I did not think about my rights and what they were, and yet I was facing many human rights challenges. I suppose before I could even begin to find the courage to think about rights, I had to find the courage to accept and to learn to live with a dementia diagnosis. But that takes a hell of a lot of courage. Some days I like to stay busy and focused, and there are days when I just about manage to push my condition and my unravelling behind a locked door in my mind. But then there are days like today when I have to remember it, I have to face it, and I have to speak out about the illness. I have to keep speaking out for the many people living with dementia, your loved ones, your friends, your neighbours, and maybe you. The majority of us living with dementia are living among you in your communities, and we are fighting hard to stay among you and live as good as we can, but we need support. I'm a wife to Sean, and I'm a mum to Martin, and I come from a family of nine. I lived in the US and the UK for many years before returning home for a better quality of life for my family. I've been blessed with a wonderful career. I was a very active citizen, serving on many boards and a promoter of human rights. Social justice has always been important to me. This was my life before the revocability of dementia diagnosis crept in. A lot of work in community development and the disability sector has been about human rights and advocating for the rights of others. So prior to my diagnosis, I struggled at work, still hoping that the mental sluggishness was due to stress and overexertion. It took so much effort just to keep up a guise of normality. My day-to-day tasks became worryingly challenging. Processing it was soul-destroying. And today, it is even worse. First, it was forgetting words, stopping mid-sentence, wondering what I was about to say, searching, covering up, forgetting again. I can still see the look of people's faces and feel that burning silence when the words didn't come and I was at a meeting. I began forgetting names and trying to keep out of the limelight. I was confused and found it so hard to motivate myself to simple tasks I had been doing all my life. They became a chore and a worry. When the opportunity to take early retirement came up, I felt I had no choice but to take it, as I slowly drifted from the vital, funny, energetic woman and inhabited the shadows. I withdrew from public activities. At home with no focus outside of myself, the days were endless, my energy sapped. I slept long hours and lost all motivation. The deepest, darkest grief descended upon me for a life I would never have. And believe me, that is true. I was flooded with lots of emotions. Frustration, loneliness, depression, and anger about life's changes and dreadful isolation. As I tried to come to terms with the diagnosis, there was yet another blow, more bad news. As you all know, the threshold age for younger onset Alzheimer's support is 65. For anyone diagnosed with early onset related illnesses prior to their 65th birthday, there's nothing. And I mean nothing at all. Sadly, what I hear today from my colleagues, that has not changed. And I am 6 years diagnosed. No support services, nowhere to go, no one to give advice to, and how to proceed. For me, having spent my adult life campaigning for human rights, this was inconceivable. I couldn't believe that a random number I would be ignored, worse still, refused all help. But I didn't have the strength to fight on. I retreated. I felt helpless for the first time. No plan, no ideas, no strategies. The first few months where I was just grappling with heartbreak. I wish there had been somebody there in those early days to tell me Alzheimer's is not just about memory. It impacts on our ability to accomplish daily tasks and it hinders our thinking process. I also would have loved somebody to give me advice on telling my family and if there were any supports available to them. Eventually, I got the courage to seek help and start telling people I had the illness and got involved in research being carried out through Trinity College Dublin, which led me to the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland. Until I reached out, all I could see was grief. But somehow, after I told people, I could see some light. So I had looked at the services locally. I was privileged that I had worked in the disability sector and I knew many OTs and I knew many people within the health service. So I was on the lucky ones and I knew where to go. And I looked at what range of services were available. Well, services are set up and they were originally set up with other needs or age groups in mind. There are no appropriate services for people like me. This is not to say that people of all ages cannot mix. Of course they can. I'm actually saying that services should not discriminate by age, but some services may appeal to people at different stages in life, and we are all individuals, and a person-centred dementia care should acknowledge and respect that. Like support with employment, this may be a service of interest to someone still working, but not as you age and want free time. Maybe I should not have given up my job. But I knew the minute I mentioned Alzheimer's, like many others, I would be surplus to requirement. People need the opportunity to discuss their needs and information that is appropriate and relevant to the stage of the condition. Policymakers and care providers need to understand that not all of us want to attend day centres and do our classes. We need to give people real options that meet their individual needs. We must think differently about our approach to dementia care. We don't have to look very far. All we have to look at is Scotland, and we will find some amazing ways of how you can make programs for people like myself. So what do we mean when we speak about rights and dementia? Well, first and foremost, people with dementia have the same human rights as everyone else, but we often face barriers for filling these rights. Our rights should include the right to a timely diagnosis, to person-centred quality care, and the right to be respected as individuals in our community. I want to give you an idea of my personal experience within the HSE and public sector and, of course, my travelling. First, there is a great lack of training of clinical and professional staff. I experience an attitude of disbelief. My invisible disability is not in my favour. You would not believe the comments. For example, how could you write anything? How could I speak publicly? How can I drive? You could not have Alzheimer's, or you would not be able to do as well as you do. It's not real dementia, is it? I often feel that far too many people in the health sector do not understand younger or early onset, and I know I'm not alone in this experience. There are far too many old-fashioned attitudes still around. In the public sector, you can change your licence. When you go to change it, and you're asked, and 10 people behind you, and you haven't told even anybody outside your family, what is your illness? You're travelling, and let me tell you, it can make or break your day. But it helps me maintain contact with friends, shop, or travel as an advocate. To try and sit on a seat that has a disability sign on a train, because it is near the door, those with dementia like to sit near the door in case we have anxiety issues. But you have to ask a very young person who has all their bags thrown on the seat beside it, would their mind moving? And then you receive some very hostile verbal until I produce my magic card. And when we ask the bus driver to get off a particular allocated stop, we expect this to happen. We want to use disability bathrooms, but we always get that look. The confusion that we have when we take trains and buses or when they're late, and we sit in an outpatient's department, and we wait and we wait, and our anxiety is at its highest. Now, you would need all day for me to tell you about my experience at airports and aeroplanes, but I will tell you, for me to get assistance, I have any illness but Alzheimer's. I've been blind, I've been deaf, I've been intellectually disabled, mentally disabled, and more. I had to complete a form for an airline asking me at what stage was my illness. The worst is when the assistance doesn't show up and you are abandoned in an airport. Thankfully, I was not robbed of my sense of humour. Awareness of dementia is improving, but we have a long way to go. It's no good giving 1 hour or one half a day and calling it dementia training or offering training online when we know that many areas here in rural Ireland don't even have broadband. We need to look at language. I'm supposed to be suffering. Well, no, I'm not suffering. I'm living as well as I can. You go to an ICE centre and they tell you to take a ticket. And you say, where is the ticket? Even though you have told them you have dementia. You go into hospital and you're moved several times with no regard to anxiety. It causes people with dementia. How you find out you have to take a driving test? It would be nice if you knew from the moment you're diagnosed. Why can't we use a blue badge? I drive along Sligo. I see many bays free, but my disability does not allow me to do that. But yet, if I just drive over to Wales, I can park in a blue badge. My need for home help. And I want to tell you this story. This is a real story. All of these things I'm telling you are things that have happened to me. I had surgery on my back a couple of years ago. And all I wanted was somebody to come to my house for 10 minutes after I had my shower and put on my elastic stockings. I was not allowed. When I tell this story across Europe, I can tell you they think we live in a third world country. A nurse came to my house and she handed me a card and she told me to get in touch with a private company. I could have done that anyway. It's not good enough, folks. We do need. All I asked for was 10 minutes. I didn't ask for any more. If I did not have the coping strategies from my cognitive rehabilitation therapy, and more recently cognitive behavioural therapy, and that is thank you to my local services, I think I would be very lonely and sink into depression. I'm proud that the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland and the Irish Dementia Working Group worked together to develop a charter of rights for people with dementia and what rights matter to them. The charter is based on internationally agreed human rights and is intended to promote the respect, protection and fulfilment of all people with dementia. I do hope it will be fully implemented sooner rather than later. In developing the charter, members of the Irish Dementia Working Group identified a wide range of human rights related issues that present for them as people living with dementia information that is accessible and timely. The UN Rights of People with Disabilities enshrines the right of people with disabilities to live in the community as well as promoting personalised services. Together, creating a pathway of support that suits the person. We consider dementia a disability. Rights for all people with disabilities are very hard to come by in Ireland. You're probably all aware that tomorrow evening there's a motion going through the Dáil seeking to sign the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. Ireland's failure to bring the provision of the UN CRPD into law clearly shows that people with disabilities have not been a priority for successive governments. Ireland now will be the last country in the European Union to ratify this important international agreement that ensures, protects and promotes the rights of people with disabilities. Ireland clearly doesn't think the rights of people with disabilities are important enough. The guiding principles that underline the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities include respect for the inherent dignity, individual autonomy and independence of people with disabilities, and so on. This is the world that I want to live in. This is the world that I want to participate in, and this is the world that I want to be part of. These rights are linked to bigger challenges we face in society, like stigma. And we can eliminate it very much by involving people with dementia in decision-making and strategy. We need to have a culture where people with dementia have a voice, where they are included in driving forward action on dementia. I cannot stress to you how important enough it is to have people with dementia involved in decision-making. And I am really pleased to say here today that I am heartened by how this is changing in Ireland. And a lot of that is thank you to the National Dementia Office. And we are grateful that we are now being asked to be involved. We have the experiential knowledge. We are the experts. And we do not want a tokenistic approach. Stigma prevents people from getting medical treatment. You know, if we're diagnosed and the quicker we can get a diagnosis, the quicker we can get on with our lives and we can live fairly well. We can plan our futures. We need to change how we talk about dementia. We need to think of the language used around dementia. We are misinterpreted. We are misrepresented. We are suffering. No, we're not suffering. We're struggling. We are wandering. For me, my whole life has been full of boundless energy. I want to be free, not chained. I want to live with purpose, not pity. I truly hope I am not a burden. And this is a word that is constantly used and makes people with dementia very sad. We need to change how we develop dementia care pathways from the point of diagnosis to post-diagnostic support. And we need to change how we fund dementia. We need to look at the biomedical model, which is outdated and out of step with reality, and the needs of people with dementia and their carers. I believe that individualised, person-centred care that engages people to live with dementia is critical to their well-being. And I think it's my right to have it. We need to look at medicines. Pharma companies need to put quality of life at the core of drugs they produce. People should not have to sacrifice their quality of life for drug effect. Education is important too, as pharma companies have excess profit, which they could channel into educating people about the correct use of medication. And education goes two ways. Pharma must be learning too. Disease management goes without saying. As we know, there's no cure yet for dementia. So it is about managing our condition. And if medication can help, then great, but not great if the side effects are worse than the outcomes. We need to continue to live full lives, so the medication we take needs to be developed with the person and their rights in mind. That way, drugs that work will evolve rather than drugs that do one thing but have many diverse side effects. My own story was I stopped in my driveway in my car and I realised I had no idea where I was going or what I was doing. I was totally lost. I was hallucinating. Luckily, I had not gone out my front gate on a busy road. My friend, a young man with family who spent a life taxi driving and then became a different person with medication that caused him severe hallucinations and infections. Who was that for? What quality of life had it given him? We need proper control of the high dose of antipsychotics and benzos, and we mustn't forget benzos, because benzos are very much being talked about, I can assure you, across Europe. And the total abuse, our human rights are violated. Nelson Mandela once said, "To deny people their human right is to challenge their very humanity." Knowing our rights is empowering and encouraging. People with dementia are finally learning to speak out, speak up and have their voices heard. And when we speak, we also speak for those who cannot be here, for those who cannot be part of today, for those whose human rights matter just as much as yours. Not everyone has become a public advocate for human rights because it is difficult. It takes almost total dedication and shedding lots of tears along the way. Advocates see the death and misery that dementia causes. Would we put our emotions to one side and we tell our story because the rewards are huge, not just for us, but for the millions of people living with dementia around the world and their families. My story is one shared by hundreds of thousands of people across Europe who is today living with dementia. Each story is unique and each story has different highs and lows, but each also share a common bond. We are people first. We are not a condition and we deserve the same rights as everybody else. Today I'm urging you to think about those who cannot be here to stand at this podium and address you. For those of us in nursing homes and hospital beds up and down the country, we're overworked staffed, are often untrained or ill-equipped to cater for the unique needs of a person with dementia. Think of the thousands and thousands of family carers who are at breaking point and forced to consider the agony of relinquishing the care of their loved one as they cannot access the support or respite they need to keep going. Think of the daughter who was caring for her two young children and has been forced to give up her career to take care of her mum who no longer recognises her, or the elderly woman with Alzheimer's confined to a trolley in an A&E ward and what seems like the most hostile and threatening of environments. My life with Alzheimer's to this point has been long, but it's not over yet. But for others, it is only beginning, and for some, it is at the end stages. But no matter where we are on the path, we know that people with dementia have been treated in ways that have undermined their personhood and infringed their human rights. In fact, dementia has been used to justify the denial of human rights to people who are cognitively impaired. We have rights. We have rights of people, rights to justice, rights to freedom of expression, rights to choice and autonomy, rights to participation, rights to education, rights to dignity, rights to freedom of movement and restraint, and rights to freedom of torture, violence and abuse, and rights as citizens. For as long as I can, I intend to hold people to account where I see social injustice applied to me and others living with dementia. It's time to use the Human Rights Act to bring injustice into the open and to work with like-minded people across all agencies. If we all work together, we can effect change. And that is why this collaboration today is so important to people like myself who have dementia. And we welcome it greatly, I can assure you. In my role with the European Working Group of People with Dementia and a board member of Alzheimer's Europe, I feel so privileged to have been involved in the most amazing European work on human rights. I've addressed the European Commission Expert Group of People with Dementia. I've addressed the World Dementia Council. I've worked with Pharma, and I participate in roundtables in the European Parliament, and I've also addressed the European Parliament, plus many more events advocating for the rights of people with dementia. Most of all, I've made many new friends. We work very hard, but we truly enjoy making a difference. And I think that's really important, that as citizens, that despite the fact that we have a cognitive impairment, that we still can get on with our lives. And with your help and all of you that work in this sector, it's really important for you to remember that. In closing, I would like to quote Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. When we face the worst that can happen in any situation, we grow. When circumstances are at their worst, we can find our best. I am trying to be the best I can be today, advocating for people with dementia. Ladies and gentlemen, words cannot express my gratitude that you've given me this opportunity to speak to you all today, and I look forward to a great day of collaboration.